Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that this podcast is presented by mybookie.ag, and that if you use the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, that you will get a 50% deposit bonus on your first deposit. And given that you are a listener to this podcast, I would assume you're relatively knowledgeable about sports, and I would trust you to try your edge on the online sportsbook. You can lay down some money and get in on the action at one of the safest online sportsbooks in the world. It's the only one that I am currently using. You can wager on all sorts of different outcomes on mybookie.ag, soccer, football, any major league, esports. You can even create your own player props, which is useful for me because if you know anything about me, I do enjoy a good player prop. So if you deposit using the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, you get a 50% bonus when you deposit. And I will add this for listeners of the TakeCast. If you deposit using the promo code MATTEK and you send proof of it to me on Twitter, I will follow you on Twitter and you can have access to me via DMs whenever you want. That's the TakeCast bonus that I'm adding in association with the mybookie.ag deposit bonus. Now let's get back to the show. Hello everyone and welcome to the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. This week I am joined by none other than RotoPat, Pat Doherty from rotoworld.com. We're here to talk about life and football and DFS and sports gambling and kind of how Pat found his way to the football world, and I think we have a really good, interesting conversation. I think all of you will enjoy it. Pretty casual, laid-back time with Pat, and of course, if you like the show, please, 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 please leave a rating and review on iTunes. We're close to getting to the 300 rating bonus episode that I will provide for you guys. Hope you guys are able to do that for me, and we'll get to the show right after this advertisement. Daily Roto is a mostly proud sponsor of the TakeCast, a mostly sports podcast. TakeCast listeners can save 10% at Daily Roto with the promo code JANIS, J-A-N-I-S. If you are playing on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto will help you improve your daily fantasy results this fall and save time in the process with lineup optimizers, ownership projections, fantasy projections, premium content, and much more. They have all the good stuff that you want to help you make money at sports betting and daily fantasy. Their new lineup optimizer will let you build optimal GPP teams with stacks based on their projections faster than I can punt money off betting on Peter Uihlein. Sure, you can play the guys that I recommend each week, but shouldn't you also get advice from a proven daily fantasy winner like Drew Dinkmeyer? Yes, I do have better hair than Drew, but I also have his cell phone number, and that makes me a winner almost as much as it makes him a winner of the DraftKings Millionaire Maker. And it's not just fantasy. They have tools to bet on player props, golf matchups, and a customizable NFL game simulator for this fall. Head over to dailyrodeo.com/premium and save 10% with promo code JANIS today. All right, everyone, would like to welcome the legendary RotoPat to the TakeCast. The man with the best tweets in fantasy football Twitter has agreed to join us. We're here to chat a little bit of football, a little bit of life, a little bit of fantasy, you know, and hopefully the libs will be sufficiently owned by the time we get out of here. Pat, man, how you doing?
Good. Nothing can own the libs as hard as accidentally starting Josh Gordon like the Browns did on Sunday. So we can't rise to that level of lib ownage, but we're
what about purposely starting Nathan Peterman? That could actually
that's like neutron bomb level lib ownage. That one will be tough. I mean, the only thing that might top that is trading up twice for Josh Allen and then starting Josh Allen. So I mean, the Bills, you got to give them credit; they are working on upping their level of lib ownage. So
they're actually going to end up owning the libs the most when Marcus Murphy out-touches LeSean McCoy over the course of these next 16 weeks.
Hey, I love Marcus actually Murphy own the libs. Too, by the way.
Oh, he's a Mizzou boy?
Yeah, he's a Mizzou guy. He was like a big play guy at Mizzou.
So him and Russell Hansborough and Jamon Moore. I know all of these horrible Mizzou players.
So if you know who Russell Hansborough is, like, you're pretty deep in the Mizzou shit there.
Well, he was like a PPR guy back when College Football Daily Fantasy existed like 4 years ago. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, he did that.
I'll say the Bills, if they want to go to a third level of Libonage, reacquire AJ McCarron at the trade deadline. For the Hugh trade that he offered last year, a 2 and a 3, bring back AJ McCarron and then have him start. That'll be like 3 tiers of just elite lib on it.
No, the highest way that they could truly troll the NFL would be if they're just like, look, Josh Allen's going to get shell-shocked if he has to play with these horrible players for 16 games. Bring in Hackenberg and just let him CFL it up all over the place. Just like, what, I mean, what could possibly go wrong? Like how does, you're not going to win any games anyway. So just throw Hackenberg out there.
It's true. You might as well do the real, someone texted me the other day, like watching Nathan Peterman, that like they felt like they had finally got to see Christian Hackenberg was the point of the text. Like this is what I imagined Christian Hackenberg would have been like if the Jets had like ever had the balls.
But Peterman didn't like take shots though. Like Hackenberg, I promise you, he gets out there, he thinks he's good. So he's taking shots. Like he's trying to like get Kelvin Benjamin open in space. He's taking hits. Like he really, like we're talking like 10 interception game is really in the range of outcomes for Christian Hackenberg. Like dude is not good.
Yeah, let's be clear. There's nothing could rise to the level of Hackenberg, but Peterman, you know, might be like as close as we'll ever get.
Like, I unfortunately, all the people who really touted Hackenberg, like, have me blocked on Twitter, so I can't go find the tweets. But, like, I specifically remember this one account, and I don't even know if this account still exists, but Vincent Frank NFL, if you still exist out there.
He's not a fan of me either. I think he's a 49ers homer.
He is a 49ers homer. He was big on one of the 49ers guys who was like a domestic abuser. He was big on like defending that guy and like making sure he got his day in court, and was like at the same time like touting Hackenberg. And I think I just berated him so endlessly that he had to block me. But if you're out there, Vinny, I remember you, and I remember that you thought Hackenberg was really good.
We never had an interaction that bad, but he was always upset at me about something. He must have me blocked now or something, because he hasn't tweeted at me in a long time.
That's good. It's good. It's good. It's a good journey on Twitter. And you know what? Honestly, I'm so self-destructive with these Twitter accounts that annoy me. I don't really block anyone. Like, I should have Clay Travis blocked just because, like, it's not productive to me to like get mad at his tweets, but they come across my timeline and they just make me mad. Like, they're so ignorant and racist and dumb that it just makes me mad. And so honestly, when someone I don't like blocks me, they're really doing me a kindness.
It's true. Clay Travis. I shouldn't even say anything about Clay Travis. I look forward to it after Donald Trump's not in office. He's going to restyle himself as like a pseudo liberal again. He just kind of rides whatever.
I would actually love, Clay, if you're listening, I would love for you to come on this podcast. I think it would maybe be like the best 15 minutes of radio before we both got too mad to continue that anyone is ever.
I gotta say, Clay is like, he like loves challenges.
He does. And he probably come on the podcast. Yeah, he probably would. So why football for you? How did you go from just being a guy who lives in Missouri and went to Mizzou to being Roto-Pat? What's the story?
I mean, obviously, I was just born to be a fantasy football writer.
True.
That's all I thought about from the day. No, I mean, the only thing I knew, basically, was that I wanted to be a writer, and I was pretty sure I'd be a sports writer. Because, yeah, like, people like us, like, usually if you get to, quote-unquote, like, this point in the industry, like, not saying either one of us are, like, really, like, a thing, actually. But, I mean, we're both known within the fantasy football world. And, like, so if you get to the point where you're, like, known in the fantasy football world, like, the odds are you probably spent, like, most of your childhood just, like, being obsessed with sports.
So obsessed. So obsessed. Yeah.
So I was just so, so obsessed with sports, obsessed with statistics, just, like, obsessed with, like, literally, you know, every sport. Just into the Olympics.
Read all the books that the public library had on professional football. No. Like, just everything. Yeah.
So I was just obsessed with sports. I feel like when I was in college, like, resisted against that. I didn't do, like, any sports writing in college, even as I was training to become a writer. But I kind of just always knew I'd be a sports writer. And, like, the near the end of college, randomly got a job with a St. Louis-based fantasy football company. Actually, it's Fanball. It's now been reincarnated.
Yeah, oh, it exists big. That's for the NFL 10s, and like even some of like the big higher stakes leagues are ran through there now.
Yeah, yeah. So I began with Fanball, which used to be based in St. Louis. The new Fanball has like very little connection to the old Fanball. But yeah, I don't know. I just kind of was trained my whole life for it, kind of fell into it, and Roto-World so it was like the combination of like being obsessed with sports and then of course just like the usual happenstance, like serendipity kind of stuff.
Right.
Evan Silva was a friend of a friend of a friend. I met Evan Silva in a fantasy baseball league. And so I knew Evan Silva from playing fantasy baseball with him. And when Fanball went out of business, I was like 23, 24. And you know, Evan is like a very giving person.
Just
Yeah. Just like super into the fantasy community. I would send him an email. I was like nervous, like, you guys like need a, cause Fanball, we like worshiped Roto World even then, like 2010, 2011. And to send him an email, they randomly needed a writer. I did a tryout shift. I never did an interview or anything like that. I just did a tryout shift. And then,
on the blurbs.
Yeah. And that like just immediately turned into like a normal shift and like kind of the rest is history basically.
I mean, writing Roto-World blurbs has to be, that's the dream job for someone who wants to just be constantly obsessed with fantasy football.
And like, it sounds pathetic, but it was like my dream job when I was at Roto-World. Cause like so when I was at Fanball, I did blurbs, but when you did a Fanball blurb shift, you did all four major sports at the same time. And so like, it was just like no way I could have ever possibly kept up with the news, obviously. So I did like a lot of like just going to Roto-World and seeing like,
and seeing what they posted
and obviously not like plagiarizing the writing, but like taking their links like, oh yeah, we got to have this, got to have this, got to have this. And
I would pay pretty good money to read NHL RotoPat blurbs from 2010.
There was a time where I knew every backup goalie in the NHL because that was one thing I would have to blurb. Like if a goalie,
yeah, when the backup goalie would get the start,
yeah. So like Sergei Bobrovsky is gonna start for the Calgary Flames tonight, y'all, and just you know do a short blurb on that. And so Roto-World was like my dream job at Fanball. I'm like, you know, this kind of sucks doing all four of these sports. It'd be nice to actually work for the site that we all agree here at Fanball is actually good,
right?
And eventually, I did, yeah. So,
it is still like that's the GOAT site. Like that's still Roto-World blurbs still have by far the biggest impact on like waiver wires, like probably even DFS ownership percentages. I would bet there's like a correlation between like when a blurb gets posted and like how many people swap onto or off of a player.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, not to be immodest there, but yeah, I mean, you can definitely see. You can definitely tell by the end of the summer, like who like the Roto-World players are, you know, like I'll just be like, or you know who reads Roto-World, like I'll be in my home league. I'm like, why, how the heck does my neighbor know who Taywan Taylor is? And that's probably just because he like read Roto-World and we had a bunch of blurbs on him.
I remember like I have this experience in my home league where it's like when whoever was on blurbs the day that Sony Michel had his knee surgery, called him a late round flyer. So everyone, and I don't know if that was you. I don't know who it was.
I honestly don't know. It might have been.
So whoever it was.
I think I would have been more kind because I was obsessed. Or I guess I shouldn't speak in the past tense. I am obsessed.
I am also Sony obsessed Michelle. With Sony yeah. Michel. Yeah. Especially now that Jeremy Hill has a torn ACL. This dude has like a clear path, like 18 touches a week. That's neither here nor there. But
yeah, we're not happy that Jeremy Hill got hurt, Davis. But
no, we're not.
Yeah, if he needed to, he did it at the right time.
And he got his injury settlement. He's going to be okay. And he'll sign on somewhere. He blocked a punt.
He made the roster. You know, he got like the vested salary or whatever, like made it a final cuts, got kept through week one. So he's good.
Yeah, he's good. And Gillislee's good too. Gillislee's making his money and, that's you know, true. Whatever. The point being though, is that Sony Michel tore his knee. And then all of a sudden everyone in my league was like, can't take Sony Michel. Roto-World called him a late round flyer. And like, you know, all of a sudden James White is going in the ninth round in play draft best balls because Sony Michel was called a late round flyer by, and which is like, that's good. That's an awesome amount of power to wield, really.
Yeah. You know, it can go haywire occasionally. If we get a little too in love with someone who like immediately busts, people are rightfully upset with us, but
Was Roto World pro or anti Bishop Sankey the year he was going in like the third round?
I'm pretty sure we were pro. I think.
What about even further? What about pro or anti Felix Jones the year he was going in the second round?
I think Felix Jones. That might have been a little before I was even my Roto World heyday, but
I was probably like 20. I was posting on the Roto World forums back then. That's how long ago that was.
Like 08, 09, maybe 10. I think we were like kind of team Felix Jones is just a track sprinter, basically. So I'm not sure if we ever like pumped him up really.
It's just amazing. It's just, I love like all the, like a couple weeks ago, I tweeted like, who's your favorite bad running back? And people had so many amazing answers.
Oh, I remember that. I was trying to think, like, I only wanted to comment if I could think of a really, really good one, and I never did.
I think the best answer is Sean Green, because everyone has owned him at some point. And he was like truly bad, but like got so much work.
So I guess that the definition is truly bad, but at some point like had to be owned in fantasy leagues. Mine is 100% Matt Asiata, actually.
Oh, he was fun because he would like score with like 2.8 yards per carry.
And who was that other dude on the Titans? Not the Sean Green on the Titans. There was another guy like
the scat back.
No, it was like a big bruiser type of dude.
Antonio Andrews.
Yes. No. Wait. Maybe I can't remember. There's been a bunch of Titans.
The Titans have had a bunch of like 240 round running, like 240 pound running backs who are awful.
It's gonna bother me if I can't think of it, but we're in the middle of a podcast, so I probably shouldn't like spend time. Like
we can figure it out. I can go comb through their roster while I'm asking you some of these questions, and we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
So important question. You are an OG, so you were here. You had a job at Roto World before Daily Fantasy even existed. You know, and maybe it existed in like there have been salary caps.
Back at Fanball, we had this thing called Snap Draft that was this literally DFS, but like we were like a failing going out of business company with like very little clout at that point. So Snapdraft didn't catch on, but was an early precursor. So Daily has been like, was like kind of bubbling under already in 2010, 2011. But yes, I just, you know, jumped in and interrupted your question in the middle of it.
Well, no, that's a good point, because as I'm asking this question, I realize my very first league when I was like 7 or 8 years old was at the newspaper in the small Kansas town I was from, and it was a salary cap league, sort of like how the football guys subscriber contest is, where, you know, every week you have like all 400 players and it's, or you know, 300 players, and you have to pick out of a salary, and you just have to, and like those just carry over week by week. So like the salary cap format has existed for a long time, but the nexus of the question is, you know, what impact has the DFS stuff had on the season long side? Because I kind of think it's made season long analysis way better.
Yeah, that's actually was going to like be like part of my answer. I was going to say like the big effect of DFS has just kind of been like professionalizing like everything, sort of capitalizing it a bit. You pumped a lot of money in. All the effects have been good, but like the main good effect, just a lot more like full-time jobs for writers now in the fantasy football industry since the DFS explosion. But yeah, it's just professionalized the whole operation. You know, fantasy was already like a big business before DFS, of course, but it's kind of like surprisingly like ramshackle, like kind of freewheeling, just like disorganized, and like DFS, like where the stakes, you know, the monetary stakes are so much higher, kind of brought like a sense of like order to the whole thing, like clarified like what kind of information was actually important, clarified like who actually has that correct information. You know, you can't mess around in DFS like the way you can.
And like in fantasy and like seasonal, you can't just like give opinions, just be like, I think this guy's gonna do good this week.
Exactly. So like I completely agree that one of the biggest effects of DFS has been like drastically increasing the quality of like season long information and advice. And I would say that's probably been like the biggest thing I've noticed, is that people just don't put up with like lazy, like haphazard analysis anymore. And like, you can't get, either as a writer or as a player, you can't get very far on the old gut these days.
And even like analysis that is like well researched or like well thought out but is bad doesn't get a pass either. Like, yeah, exactly. if there's a real flaw in your methodology, people are able to suss it out pretty quick.
Yes. So everyone's is more informed, and it's been a very good thing.
Yeah, it has been. Also, is Jackie Battle the guy that you were thinking of?
No. Actually, I think yes.
We're back to the 2013 Tennessee Titans with Jackie Battle.
I had Googled 2012 Tennessee Titans, but I think actually it was Jackie Battle. I'm pretty sure. I'm really quick going to search in the Roto-World archives. I think one time I compared him to a lawnmower. But no, I don't know. Never. But Jackie Battle seems like as good of a guess as any. Like you said, there's been too many big, slow, humongous Titans running backs to choose from.
I mean, there's been hundreds. Jackie Battle, by the way, has been fantasy relevant in the past. There's another bad running back for that list. So along those same lines, the sports betting thing, I think, took some of the major companies by surprise, some others not so much, but I think we're already starting to see it creep into fantasy analysis. Like at Roto World, Ray and Rich are giving out picks on the podcast and on and the premium side. I think they went 7-0 week one.
So they had a huge first week, and yeah. I'm going to divulge proprietary information in the Roto World Slack channel. They were both very nervous that it was going to be like their best week of the season. So,
oh, well, it will be their best week.
Yeah, exactly. So they were quite aware that, you know, that's probably not going to happen again. So I'm going to throw you guys under the bus. You guys had your best week. You better just accept it. Okay?
I went 4-0-1 in this basically this pentathlon, whatever, this Action Network thing. I'm like, I will not get four wins again for the rest of I will not go four wins against
you. And I, we're very similar. Like, we're obsessed with big play type of players.
Yeah.
We're obsessed kind of like with swaggy players. We like high scoring teams. I feel like this is the best way to be a fan or a fantasy player. So that's how it's going to be like Achilles heel. Like, we're going to like always talk ourselves into the swag.
Basically. Well, I mean, I did it week one, like, on the Swolecast, I was like, guys, Traquan Smith, good pivot to Keelan Cole in tournaments, which is like, that's like, you know, he's super athletic. He was a third round pick. He played
very hashtag on brand.
Yeah. Very on brand. And he played like 10 snaps and got no targets and just like was, you know, didn't exist, but it's just like, I truly cannot help myself.
I actually can't either. And one of my main home leagues is a big play league, like yardage bonuses, longer the touchdown, the more points you get.
Yep. And same.
That is always kind of warped. I feel like what I look for.
Well, it was my first league with my dad and his friends. It's a 16 team league. And I think I played in that the first year when I was 18, and I was just like, that's how it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, for me, it wasn't my first league I was in, but it was like the first league I joined as like a professional. So my brother-in-law was an accountant, and the accounting firm he was at had this big play league, which we are still in. He no longer works there. But it's only an 8-team league, but every team is required to have a co-manager. And like you have to draft four quarterbacks, you have to draft two defenses, two kickers. So even though it's only 8 teams, it's like a big draft pool, and the rules yeah. are so like complicated that it goes through the playoffs too. So like it adds like many extra layers of strategy to the draft. So I actually do love the draft, but yeah. Anyway, the whole point of the story is I got invited to join this league. It was like right after I had started in the industry, and like the expectation amongst the accountants was that my brother-in-law was gonna be like a fish, basically.
Right.
Like, the league is so complicated, but he was allowed to choose whoever he wanted for the co-manager, and he did not tell them that he was choosing a fantasy football professional. And then when I showed up there, like a few of them had Fanball magazines, and I told them like I worked for the magazine. And they were already like, they actually did like kind of annoy them. And then we won the league that year. And then I've just been obsessed with it ever since. We've only won it like one other time since.
That's then. Just, it's like all the years I've like 2016 was the year. I think I won like 3 fantasy championships. Cause that was the year David Johnson was the number one overall player. So it was just like, once you have, if you have the number one overall guy,
the two biggest years, I think I've had, I don't know. Sorry, I keep interrupting you. Two biggest years, I think, that was the Arian Foster year and the Josh Gordon year. I had both of them in like every league, and they like carried me those 2 years. Those are like my two most memorable fantasy years.
the first Josh Gordon year pretty memorable. That was what 2013.
Yeah. 2013. So yeah,
that was the first year I really played DFS too, and I remember Gordon was like not owned that first week he was active.
Yeah, because he was suspended the first two games, I think. Right?
So, I mean, obviously, Josh Gordon, something was up with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, so I'm really, as you can see, I'm very prone to digressions.
So the sports betting thing, though.
Yeah, sports betting.
I think, and I've brought this up with almost everyone from football on the show, I kind of think that 5 years from now, sports betting, unlike DFS, where season-long has clearly remained the king, and then DFS is the corner of, like, all these successful fantasy sites, they have, you know, they have the season-long stuff, and then the DFS is in the corner. I kind of think 5 years from now, Roto World, Football Guys, 4 for 4, I kind of think it's going to be, like, side-by-side, because betting is just so much easier than it is to draft, and, you know, no one tears an ACL and ruins your bet or whatever.
Yeah, it's easier. And like, there's just very few barriers. I was just going to say it's easier in a different way.
The barrier right now is just like finding a place to put your bet in.
So one reason I think you might be right is because we have a continent, you know, right across the ocean where we can look at and see like it's already the reality. Like betting, there's not like an aura of expertise.
Yeah, they don't betting. They don't care about fantasy in Europe.
So like, Ireland and England too. Like you don't have to, it's not like some perception. You have to be like an expert to place a bet. You know, like they're just kiosks, like literally like in the middle of the road. You can like go in.
You just like go to a gas station and place a parlay. Yeah. That's what you've
ever been
to Canada?
Ireland or London. Yeah, there's just like these tiny like little. They're like Subways basically. They're like Subway sandwich shops but for betting, and so like. There's no difference between America and Europe that like means like betting couldn't like get to that level here. So I actually absolutely agree that DFS is like the big bang for fantasy. Maybe betting, like you said, it'll be side by side, but maybe more of its own like separate channel. But like I completely agree that it's going to like rise to if not quite the level of popularity is like redraft fantasy football, then very, very close.
The thing that will stop it from being quite so popular is that a lot of the people who are like involved in the betting industry now are just like so scammy and scuzzy that does limit, you know, their existence as far as like touting. That's like a real thing.
Yes. And we're still a very Puritan society. Like it's kind of amazing we even legalized gambling. Thank God we did, but you know, like the Puritan streak is not going to like disappear overnight. So there'll probably still be a, you know, kind of a stigma against it.
Yeah. So we're trying to be evergreen here, but we've already gone into like some specific analysis. So, you know, it doesn't matter. The biggest thing that I'm going to remember from this week one is Darnold beating the Lions on the road and like bouncing back from that pick six. Like if Darnold goes on to be like a 13-year starter and like makes the playoffs a bunch of times, like we're going to talk about that, that pick six, the way we talk about Brett Favre's like completion to himself.
Yes. And it's also going to be, you know, the most fun sports like juxtaposition comparison in a long time where you like, you can just, lots of players were passed on by so-and-so team. Like the scenario is so clear, like the Giants and Jets and Darnold, like it's going to be like, you know, the most talked about storyline maybe in sports history.
And Eli just whelped all over the place.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Jacksonville.
It's like it could not have been more stark in week one. Like the implications of the decision where Darnold bounces back, wins the game. Eli looks more finished than ever. And, because considering the market and considering like the franchises and the fan bases, I think it could end up being like the most discussed like sports comparison of all time. Like New York radio for just 20 straight years, every single call is about why did the Giants pass on Sam Darnold.
And Gettleman is like completely positive that he made the right choice too.
I know. Give me that level of certainty on something, Lord.
On anything in the world.
Yeah, literally anything. So in like, or even just the level of certainty that he had that Jonathan Stewart wasn't done. Like he wasn't as certain.
Did Jonathan Stewart get cut? I don't even actually know.
No, he actually played. He got like 3 carries in week one, but he's apparently behind Wayne Gallman.
So, good for him.
He essentially got cut.
Good for him. Wayne Gallman wasn't good playing for like a legitimate all-star team at Clemson. People forget that Wayne Gallman was on a team with Sammy Watkins, DeAndre Hopkins, Taj Boyd, and some tight end, Jordan Leggett, who's in the NFL now and was like just okay. People forget.
You can't even be mad. You can only be impressed.
So we're 5 months from the NFL draft now, and the order the quarterbacks went in, it was Mayfield, Darnold, the other guy.
Do you
guy. Know
third?
No, I don't.
Allen.
Yeah, Allen. Yeah. Rosen. Yeah, I kind
of Allen went ahead of Rosen.
Completely forgot that Allen went ahead of Rosen, although of course he did because of the Bills. So has your perception on those five guys from April to now changed in any meaningful way? Like, are you like, wow, Darnold really looks like he belongs? Or, wow, you know, Lamar Jackson, after watching him in preseason, maybe he's not ready?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say I've mostly held steady. Maybe the only guy that's really changed on was like Lamar. Because he looked pretty shaky out there. But he was with mostly second and third teamers against other second and third teamers. He's just so slight. You know, he just looks like a tiny guy. So hopefully, like, he will, like, bulk up this year. But nothing's really changed because the guys that I was most excited about were Mayfield and Rosen. And certainly a nice attaboy.
No, I'm very excited about Rosen, too. And it bums me out that Bradford's just, like, playing because he's horrible. Bradford, like, is such a sad story to me because I'm an Oklahoma fan and I do like him. And, like, when he's good, he's, like, pretty fun because he just, like, you know,
I loved him like in college. I think he's one of the greatest. I think he's like underrated in terms of being one of the greatest
people legitimately forget how fun he was at Oklahoma.
Yeah. Hashtag like a true hashtag. People forget he was like legendarily good at Oklahoma. And I felt like he could make like any throw basically. I thought, injuries has completely ruined his career, but now he's basically like
injuries. And I don't know if he's ever had a truly like elite offensive coordinator or quarterbacks coach.
No. And you know, now he's just like out there like a stone man.
He's like Fitzpatrick now, basically.
He can't move. He's not like Fitzpatrick can still
Fitzpatrick,
move.
Fitzpatrick, I guess, he's like Kerry Collins.
No, so he's like Ryan Mallett. Yeah, Ryan Mallett or Kerry Collins, totally. Like, he's a lot like Kerry Collins. That's actually a great comparison. He's like can't move. Like, his knees, he's got the Jay Ajayi, like, in both knees, like the bone on bone.
And he'll probably be on NFL rosters for like 7 more years.
Yeah, I mean, well, he stands very straight for the national anthem, so you can't take that away from him. So he's a man.
That's what the Bills should do. The Bills should just sign Kaepernick, man. Someone's got to sign Kaepernick. There are so many bad quarterbacks. Like, how is Ryan Tannehill meaningfully better than Colin Kaepernick?
They got to draw straws because they got to win this lawsuit. They won't
win the lawsuit just because, you know, the NFL just has too much resources. But the fact that it already went through like one stage, right? And Kaepernick won the first stage of the collusion lawsuit.
Yeah, they tried to get it. They were trying to get it like summarily dismissed, basically. And
right.
The judge, no, there's basically that there was enough evidence for it to be decided by a jury and not just thrown out. And you know, they're trying. If they win, there's like a fairly high percentage chance that it will like invalidate the NFL's collective bargaining agreement. Cause there's some clause in the CBA that like, if any instance of collusion is proven, that it invalidates the CBA. So there's like beyond just money, like paying out like a penalty to Colin Kaepernick, there's like a lot riding on the
stuff. I just like, if I was to set odds on it, it'd be like -10,000 that the NFL wins just because they have too much money. They have too much resources. And even if it did go to a jury decision, like literally it's all circumstantial in Kaepernick's favor. Like it would be like Kaepernick was good. Kaepernick that last year in San Francisco, he was like fine. Like sure, he was better than Blaine Gabbert, but I mean, you know, a lot of guys are better.
Yeah.
And like, if you want to make the argument that Kaepernick is like a distraction and, you know, other players didn't like him, you can build a case that there are reasons for each individual owner without colluding with the other owners to not put him on the team. But clearly it is a case of collusion. And clearly the league office has been on the phone with some of these people, and it's guys like who's the Texans owner?
Bob McNair.
Yeah, so that guy clearly is putting pressure on other owners to be like, you don't let that some bitch in our league. you know?
So like you said, yeah, it'd be a winnable case for the only, like, the hiccup for the NFL could be that there might be like a literal like smoking gun collusion, like, emails with like subject, like,
emails out there where some white owner is calling Kaepernick the N-word. You, like, 100% that exists out there. It's just a matter of finding it.
Or just like even like an email with like the subject, like hashtag don't forget about the colluding or something.
So, I mean, also though, like, how many of these guys do their correspondence via email though? Like, think of how old these people are. Like, a lot of it's probably phone calls that are not being recorded.
That's true. And like rich, smart people too now, like, don't leave email trails.
So no.
We'll see. I agree with you. The NFL is, you know, going to probably win the lawsuit.
Which is a huge bummer, because, like, also Kaepernick was fun to watch, and now he'll never play football again.
I know. He was one of the most fun prospects, like, ever. Like,
yeah. Like, people,
such a unique skill.
People forget.
They do, yeah.
He was, like, before all of this, before Harbaugh and – oh, man, don't get me started on that guy. The worst. But before that khaki-panted doofus, like, Kaepernick – that playoff game against Green Bay, I mean, people should not forget that. That was an amazing game.
He had one of the most unique skill sets we've ever seen. It was just like an ostrich as like a runner, basically.
A squid.
Yeah, and he had like a Mahomesian arm, just like such a strong arm, such a dynamic runner. Hashtag people forget.
People do forget. Man, I had kind of even forgotten, like, until I really started thinking about it. Like,
he wasn't that fun to watch in the final year or two. I mean,
things got really bad in San Francisco.
So that's why people forget, but people do forget.
What happened in San Francisco? Like, was Kaepernick found out? Was Harbaugh, like, no longer ahead of the curve? Like, was all the skill position players bad? I don't even really remember.
It was just like everyone got exposed at once, basically. Trent Baalke, they just had
That's right. He's like the worst GM in the world.
So they had like the legendarily good, like, 2011 and 2012 drafts, I believe. And then after that, they just, like, kept taking players with torn ACLs.
Yeah, they took, like, Tank Carradine and then the running
Marcus
back.
Marcus Lattimore.
That was another take that Vincent Frank NFL had, was that Marcus Lattimore was a great draft pick and that he was really going to pan out.
I mean, he was a special prospect until
He tore his whole body.
His knee, like, basically exploded on the field. That was one of the worst injuries.
So these were the receivers on that 2015 49ers team. Anquan Boldin at age 35, Torrey Smith, Quentin Patton, Vance McDonald, and the primary running back was, of course, Carlos Hyde and Sean Drone.
Man, it's insane. Quentin Patton was like a thing kind of like a year or two, like, in fantasy circles, and, you know, now he's just like, you haven't heard, you know. It's
people,
just like,
I mean, every year there's like some slot receiver that comes out and has like 8 targets the first game, and people are like, that's the guy.
Yes. Who was it
Eddie Royal for like 5 years in a row? Oh, yeah.
Was it Rashad Higgins in the Browns last year, right? Who I think had like 15 targets.
He was Min Price in Daily Fantasy Week 2.
Yeah.
And he had like 12 targets and like 2 DraftKings points.
So I saw a few people like, so to speak, empty the clip on him in Fab, and didn't pan out.
It was probably me in the Roto World All-Star League.
Probably
We did a last year for that league. We do this slow email draft where we actually do it in a Google Doc. So
it gets slower every year.
It does. But I was the unlucky fool who took Spencer Ware in like the 4th round.
Oh God. And they got hurt like during the game or something.
Yeah, and then someone immediately took Kareem Hunt, and then I was just like, "Well, what are you gonna do?"
Well, yeah, this year is Mike Clay had Jerick McKinnon, and then I think whoever was like on the clock when he got hurt just took
Alfred Morris immediately. Yeah, which, like, of course that's gonna work out.
So now, yeah, even that has failed now.
So while we're on the subject of Kaepernick and Nike, and of course, you know, everyone who saw my appearance on NBC5 on Chicago local news knows I'm a big proponent of the Kaepernick ad campaign. But how do you deal with the intersection that is fantasy football Twitter and the fact that a lot of people that play fantasy football are mega people? Like, what is your strategy for dealing with the ads?
My strategy is just that I have to do, like, if you're going to do social media at all, like you kind of just have to do like what is going to make you happy. And like, I wouldn't be happy like keeping all my political thoughts bottled up.
Same.
So, like I have to just kind of like get them out there. Like it's really like an energy, like a pressure valve release. Like I don't like, it's dumb, but like, you know, this is the way we communicate now. And like, I would feel like, no one's like listening to what I'm saying really, but I would like feel like a coward, like if I didn't say the stuff. And so like my strategy is always like, I got to tweet what I want to tweet and then I'll deal with the consequences. Yeah. Of course I try like not get fired from my job. So like, I don't make
right.
it like, too extreme, but like,
I'm sure there will be a day where someone I work with is going to be super conservative and me being outspoken about this stuff on Twitter and on this podcast will totally prevent me from having an opportunity in the future, or like one of these dumb feuds I've had with someone about like Vincent Brown, like someone will remember that like 9 years later and be like, Davis is such a GD dickhead, I can't believe it, we're not hiring him. Like it will come back to me, I'm certain of it.
Hopefully it doesn't happen to either one of us. What I will say about the ads is they're usually surprisingly fine. Like the one when they get really lit is always about gun control. That's where it still like goes completely off the rails for me.
Right.
Like I think a lot of them, you know, have just unfollowed me at this point. But one of my main tacks usually though is like when people, the MAGAs, do come at me, is like I try to like kill them with kindness isn't the wrong is like the wrong way to describe it, but like I try to like meet them at face value, which they never expect. Like they just usually expect me to like tell them like, you know, F off immediately. But like I do like a lot of like hashtag engagement, and that's like basically won't give them the satisfaction of like you know, like getting me to like stoop to their level or whatever. And a lot of them like either just like give up very quickly, like say they're sorry actually, or you know, like I have to do very little blocking. But
I just go straight for the report to Twitter. And a lot of those people will have like insensitive comments about women or immigrants. Yeah. And, like I would say over the last 3 months, I've probably gotten like 50 accounts like blocked and removed from Twitter.
I will say, yeah, if people are tweeting like slurs at me or like that kind
yeah,
of stuff.
Yeah. Like if you come in my mentions and you have like an American flag in your name and say something about like 45, like there's like a 78% chance that I'm blocking you and reporting you to Twitter and trying to get your account banned.
See that? I won't have you that hair trigger. Cause I grew up in like an argumentative family. I'm a liberal in Missouri. So like, I'm kind of used to scrapping, you know,
your theory is you want to do what makes you happy. Like if I were to give myself into like being online and arguing with these people, I would truly never log off. And so it's actually releasing and soothing for me to just be like, okay, this is a bad person who believes in bad things, and I'm just going to clear them out from even being able to try and bother me.
That makes sense. It's probably the most healthy way to approach it, actually. And I used to mix it up all the time, but most of the time now, you know, I got two kids, like I'm just like supposed to be writing all the time. And like, I just like, I know if I reply to this, it's going to be like 45 minutes of my life.
A couple people have gotten me like over the last 4 months, a couple people have gotten me to get into it with them. And I never feel good about it. Like I'm never like, oh,
I really do never ever feel good.
Yeah, like I came off of that conversation really looking smart. Like, no, and like even me like tweeting about like Clay Travis being dumb, like that's probably not good. And if Clay Travis and I went somewhere and had a couple Diet Cokes, like he's probably fine or whatever. Like
he would probably be fine.
Like yeah. I probably disagree with him about a lot of like important things, but also like whatever. At the end of the day, there are worse people. And
Clay, you know, yeah, you continue.
Well, no, it's just like, Twitter is this horrible vortex of like anger and pain, and no one likes to be on it all the time, but none of us can log off. But it is helpful to realize like we make it that way.
Yes, we do. We're all, I think it was a Sum 41 song once called "We Are All to Blame," and we pretty much are all to blame. Not in terms of like, we're not all to blame in terms of like making it toxic, because there's, you know, we're not out there making it toxic, but
right.
We are all to blame in that, like, we keep the loop going, and, like, we feed into it, and, like, we engage with it, and we can't, like, leave it, even though we just should.
Right, it's a monster.
Yes.
Part of the reason I can't leave it is your tweets are too good. Like, there's been probably like 8 times that I've been like, wow, that tweet is so good. Like, I wish I, you know, a tweet is good when you wish that you had tweeted it instead.
You're too kind, but by the way, I love your tweets too.
They're okay.
It is great. You know, usually if you have a really good one, it feels good out of the hand, so to speak, you know, like it's going in the hoop.
Like, you know when one's going for like 20, 25 retweets, 85 favorites. Like, you know, yeah. you know that's coming and you feel good about it.
Exactly. Although it's really disappointing if you think it's coming and then it doesn't. Like, sometimes it's just like too obscure, like too inside your own.
I get really bummed out that no one cares about anything I say unless it's about football. Like, because I'll tweet about golf or about soccer or whatever and just no interactions. Like, that's like 3 replies, no retweets, 4 faves. And that's like the ceiling of one of my soccer tweets.
Yeah, I have the same. I do the soccer tweets too. It was more during the World Cup. I'll do some screen grabs occasionally on Saturdays, like a particularly absurd.
Oh, people do like the videos. I got the video of like Neymar rolling 900 times.
Oh, that's right. That was an amazing.
I think you
said a totally normal amount of rolls.
Yeah, that was a good one. Like, people are into that, like making fun of soccer.
Yeah, that was a great one, by the way.
So as extremely online people, this is also something I try and ask pretty much everyone who comes on. What's your advice for getting offline? What's your non-technological escape? How do you balance, you know, just the bloodshot eyes of being glued to a screen with, you know, like real world things?
Well, one thing I did was I cheated and I had kids.
I've heard that's effective.
So even if I want, like, the hellscape like washing over me like 24 hours a day, like, even if I did want that, there would still be like 1 to 2 hours where I had like literally no choice but to like keep my kids alive. So that's one way. But
so that does, I mean, that's got to really limit the hellscape. I should tell Drew Dinkmeyer that. He's been like, he has this meditation bet going on right now, but I should tell him the shortcut is just to, like, you know, adopt a kid or something.
Trying to think of like a serious answer. I mean, I think like part of it is like, they're like kind of like 2 things like we kind of all like have to admit to each other. And like one is that you're never going to be logged off like the rest of your life. Like,
yeah,
you might successfully quit like one of the networks. Like, you might quit Twitter. You might quit Facebook. You might quit Instagram.
I have honestly, true to God, quit everything but Twitter in terms of like networking. I don't check Facebook. I don't check Instagram. Like, I have freed myself of that. But like, that's
still
like what that's what a normal person would do. But I'm constantly refreshing the RotoWorld app, right? Like, there's like another thing which I've like, you know, or the MLB at bat app. Like, there's always something that I need to be refreshing.
So yeah, you might like successfully quit most of them, but like, there's no going back to like the old ways. Like, we're going to be logged on. Like, it's never not going to be like bouncing around in your head, basically. And then like, so you're always going to be logged on. But then like, knowing that you're always going to be logged on, like, you have to like, a lot of people might not feel like this, but to me, it's like, I've always been like a completionist my whole life. So there's like the feeling like you got to read every tweet. Like, you got to actually read every tab. Like, you have to know that, like, you're never going to get to it all. Like, you're never going to close out every tab. You're never going to make it through every tweet. Like, it's like a really dumb, simple thing, but like, you have to like let that go. And we just have to keep, it's good. Like, we're having this conversation because this isn't like the only place having this conversation. Like, we're finally to like a point as a society where like no one's like happy with the way the situation has gotten. And like, we're never going to be logged off, but like, we know like we have to make it better somehow. And like, we have to do like the base level thing. Like, so like, when you're a student, like, you got to go to class, you got to turn in your homework on time. Like, we need to at least like do like the base level stuff with like the internet. Like, we need to like, you know, not be on our phones when we're at dinner with each other. Like, we need to like not be on our phones like when we're playing like FIFA with each other. I say this because I was playing FIFA with my friends last night.
No, but I can't even play video games without listening to a podcast or something now. Like, just the stimulation of playing a video game is not enough. It's insane.
It is insane. And like, it's so much, it's like psychic baggage. Like, just everything together. Like, there's just so much to consume now. I spend like all my energy consuming things, like even like offline stuff, you know, like books, magazines, video games, movies, and of course the internet, and it is very overwhelming. I don't know if any of us have quite figured out like how to navigate it. Like, I think about it all the time because now I have these two kids, and like I don't want my kids to be like addicted to like this like right off the bat. So it's like something I think about like all day, every day, and don't really have a good answer. I will say another cheat shortcut is like to do have like some like dead media actually. Like I get a bunch of magazines still.
No, read books.
My thing is actual books.
My thing is if you read 10 pages a day of a book, you will read 10 books in a year, because that'll get you about 300 pages. Most books you read will be within 50 pages either way of 300 pages, and you'll read 10 books and you will be a better, you will feel more nourished, more thoughtful, more awake.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. I do like literally the exact same thing. I read every day. You're probably only about 10 pages, but almost all of that's like more long-term knowledge than you get on Twitter. And it's very good to do like deliberate reading, you know, like when you're Twitter, like everything is like so spontaneous, like spur of the moment, like, oh, I'm going to click this link. I got to click this link.
And like when you're on Twitter, like when you're in the fantasy football world, it's like part of like, that's your work brain being like, oh, I should store this away to put in an article later. Yes, like if I see like a really good tweet from Scott Barrett or something, I'm going to put that up in another tab so I can reference it later.
Yeah, but it's like doing deliberate reading is good. Just like usually you're more engaged with it. It's usually something you'll actually learn something from. Like when you do it in an actual book, you know, there's not like an iMessage that can pop up. There's not like another tab next to the tab you're reading, like for whatever reason your brain decides it needs to click on that tab. And
like just when I go work on an article, do you do this where like you get like a paragraph done and then like, oh, got to click to Twitter.
Yep, got to go check yourself. Twitter. Yep. You have to reward yourself. It's real bad.
This is truly the hellscape.
It is. So my rankings article is roughly, so quarterbacks, running backs, and receivers. I basically do 5 200-word paragraphs for each position. It's like 1,000 words per position, basically. Like exactly like you said, after I get a paragraph done, like, whoa, man, been so productive. I gotta reward myself. Gotta get the endorphin shot from the tweets. And, yeah, I haven't really figured out a great solution for how to not do that. So I'm all ears.
My thing is meditate 10 minutes in the morning, read 10 pages of a book at night. And it every day that I do that consecutively, every week that happens all 7 days, I feel just generally better.
Yes, you really will. Reading actual books is like maybe the most important thing you can do, just because you learn and it disconnects you from everything that's going on online.
And it is insane how much calmer your brain feels. Like you, but then when you put the book down, it's like, and you, like, if you don't immediately go to your phone,
oh yeah, you gotta
your brain just has like a void and it's just in like total overdrive.
So yeah, every night the final actual thing I do is read, but then I get in bed. Even now with my son, currently my 2-month-old son is in the room with my wife and I, so two other people in the room, I still get on my phone and like stare at the glow for like 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah, you have to.
It's real bad.
Yeah,
but yeah, you have to. And we're always gonna be logged on, and we just got to figure out ways to occasionally log off.
That's a good answer. Most people who come on the podcast have a more idealist answer about finding ways to log off without admitting that there's never a way to truly be offline.
Because yeah. I mean, I've really dabbled in the idealism and like fantasized and like dreamed about being logged off, but it's just you know, unless we have World War III and we get Stone Aged, which, you know. Could happen.
Sure, that's in play.
Yeah, it's unless we get Stone Aged, it's not going to happen. So we're going to have to figure out ways to make being logged on better, or just like life hacks to occasionally be logged off.
There we go. That's a great way to end the hellscape. Pat, thanks for joining us. Do you want to plug the Roto World podcast or anything like that?
Yeah, I do my weekly ranks every Thursday. We have 2 or 3 podcasts a week. I go on our Thursday evening posts, Friday morning one. It's quite good. It's different than the Take Cast. We're not allowed to you know, we don't get to digress quite like this, but it's still a good podcast.
Probably a lot of Philip Lindsay talk this week. So that's good.
Oh, hopefully, I think they probably took care of that on the waiver
wire. Our Lord and Savior, Philip Lindsay.
Yeah. I think, thankfully, that's probably mostly Raymond Summerlin on our waiver wired one had to talk about Philip Lindsay. I probably won't have to do that, thank God. So no offense to Philip Lindsay. I'm sure you're a perfectly good football player. Definitely someone who I know.
The best football player?
Just definitely a player I know a lot about.
Definitely, same. Yeah. All right, so listen to the Roto World podcast, read Pat's rankings, and go follow him on Twitter for all the good hellscape tweets at RotoPat.
Oh, thank you, Davis. It has been my pleasure.